throughout the tour until its closing days in England. Raymond had not so much as acknowledged the existence of his mother or his stepfather in the newspaper column that he wrote daily and transmitted by cable, as he covered with considerable cogency a startlingly intimate view of the European political scene. The Daily Press, his employer in New York, was said to have had to resort to threats to force Raymond into writing and publishing a statement regarding his own position. This was the sheerest nonsense, the kind stimulated by the need of metropolitan people who feel that they simply must be seen as having inside information on everything. The fact of the matter was that Raymond's publisher, Charles O'Neill, was a more than ordinarily perceptive man. He telephoned Raymond at the Savoy Hotel in London, and, after an exchange of information on the prevailing weather conditions in each country, a report of past weather phenomena, and a foretelling of what might be expected from the weather on either side of the Atlantic, O'Neill, who was paying for the call, broke in saying that he felt Raymond could have no conception of the extent of the publicity his mother's European tour had been producing all over the country, nor could he have any way of realizing how closely he, Raymond Shaw, had been allied with Iceland's actions and purposes. He read from a few articles, shuddering at the cost of the telephone tolls. Raymond was aghast. He asked what O'Neill thought he should do. The publisher said he saw no reason why the cost of the entire call could not be charged to the syndicate. He meant that he felt both the paper and Raymond should relent from their fixed position on the matter of Raymond's family being mentioned in his writings, and that Raymond should at once file at least one column of opinion on Iselinism and the present tour. Raymond complied that day, and the column was reprinted more than any other single piece the paper had ever caused to be syndicated, and the toll charges for the call to London were absorbed by the syndicate without the slightest demur. The column read, in part, "I have known John Yerkes Iselin to be an assassin and a blackguard since my boyhood. He lives by attacking. He is the cowardly assassin in politics who strikes from the dark and evil alley of his opportunism. With no exceptions, the justifications for these attacks have been so flimsy as to have no standing either in the courts of law or in the minds of individuals capable of differentiating repeated accusation from even a reasonable presumption of guilt. The ultimate result is a threat to national security. Iselin is laying a foundation for the agencies of American government to serve totalitarian ends rather than the government of the United States as we have hitherto known it." Raymond insisted upon reading the dispatch to his mother before he sent it off. He read it in a monotone with a stony face, fearful of the response it would bring. "Oh, for Christ's sake, Raymond," his mother said. "What do you suppose I'm going to do, sue you? I know you aren't asking me, but send the silly thing. Who the hell reads beyond the headlines anyway?" She waved him away contemptuously. "Please go cable your copy. I'm busy." Raymond was unaware of being in an anomalous position in London after his column on Johnny and his mother appeared in the States. It was reprinted in the English newspapers at once. Writing of his mother's part in what he termed their conspiracy of contempt for man, Raymond had described her as a caricature of the valiant pioneer women of America who loaded the guns while their husbands fought off the encircling savages, in that he saw his mother and Johnny as the savages, and if a nation's blood is its honor and its dignity before the world, then that blood covered their hands. This appeared to be in direct opposition to basic policies of some British newspapers that had made a pretty pound indeed out of that steely treacle of home and mother, so that at least a portion of the press that attended Raymond's mother's farewell conference at the Savoy Hotel viewed Raymond not at all enthusiastically. Had they been able to measure how Raymond viewed them, as he viewed all the world, the shooting would have started straight off. On the other hand, another section of the British press so detested Senator and Mrs. Iselin that it quite approved of Raymond's attack upon his mother, although it would not, of course, ever permit itself to print that view. Both sides had the opportunity to air their views, however indirectly. Before she left London, Mrs. Iselin told the reporters who had assembled in a large room named after a production of Richard Doyle Carte that she would urge her husband's Senate committee to investigate the Labour Party of Great Britain, as she had assembled documentary proof that it was a nest of socialists and crypto-communists, and that this political party could, if returned to power, smash the alliance upon which the friendship of our two great nations has been based, and under the guise of honest difference of opinion, sabotage the great American purpose before the world. It was as though the great glacier had slid down from the top of the world, and enveloped the hotel. 60 men and women stood staring at her, their chins resting comfortably on their chests, mouths wide open, eyes glazed. One gentleman of Fleet Street threw his full glass of whiskey and water backward over his head in a high arc to crash in the corner of the large room rather than drink it, which is criticism indeed from a newspaperman of any country. He said,
"Madam, my name is Joseph Pole of the Daily Advocate Journal. I repudiate you, your husband, and your most peculiar son."
He turned to a lady journalist on his left and took the highball from her hand.
"May I?"
he asked. Then he threw the contents of the drink into Mrs. Iceland's ankles. Raymond knocked him right through the throng. At this juncture, that portion of the journalistic group which had objected to Raymond in the first place for having attacked the profitable institution of motherhood in his column took this chance to strike out at him, while the group which had secretly approved Raymond's utter public rejection of his mother now saw their chance to have at her themselves, and were led forward by female colleagues brandishing raised umbrellas. The result was a melee. Mrs. Iselin swung chairs, water carafes, and broken whiskey bottles, doing most painful damage, but emerging physically unharmed. Raymond laid about him with his extraordinary strength and his natural antipathy. The news photographers present very nearly swooned with ecstasy over the turn taken, for, from every British newspaper reader's point of view, here was Iselinism in action, with British righteousness whacking it over the head. Beginning with the very next editions, the British press indulged in its own sort of good-natured London journalists' fun, which could be described by the subject of their reporting as being an experience not unlike falling nude into a morass of itching powder while two sadistic dentists drilled into one's teeth at the instant of apogee of alcoholic history's most profligate hangover. The ultimate end of all of these combative news stories was that when Mrs. Iselin and her son needed to journey to Southampton to embark for home, some 115 London policemen, whom the world knows affectionately as Bobbies, after their founder, Sir Robert Peel, needed to bludgeon a path through the howling mass of outraged citizenry to get them out of their hotel, following which a semi-military motorcade was formed to race them to the ship. The entire incident was a stiff test of Anglo-American relations beyond a doubt, and somewhat scored John Iselin's own lack of popular favor in the British Isles. While Raymond had been in Paris in late June, a member of the French Chamber of Deputies, who was co-leader of the political party having the record of greatest resistance to the government then in power, was assassinated in his Hôtel Particulier en Rue Louis David in the 16th arrondissement, baffling police and security agencies. While Raymond was in London on the evening before his mother's famous debate with the British press, a peer who was greatly admired for having articulated a liberal, humanistic, and forward-looking life as publisher of a chain of national newspapers and periodicals, Lord Maurice Croftnell, was murdered while he slept. There was not a clue as to the identity or motivation of his killer.